In the beginning, there was darkness, a void waiting to be filled with the echoes of destiny. From the depths of time, legends emerged. Heroes forged in the fires of adversity, their stories etched in the fabric of eternity. Through the sands of ancient deserts, across the vast expanse of galaxies, and amidst the tumultuous waves of the ocean, their journeys began. But amidst the chaos, there arose a whisper, a call to action, a beacon of hope. Now, as the world holds its breath, a new tale unfolds, a story of courage, of triumph against all odds. Join us as we delve into the depths of imagination, as we embark on a journey beyond the realms of possibility. For in every tale lies a lesson, in every legend, a truth waiting to be discovered. This is not just a podcast. This is an odyssey, a quest for knowledge, a quest for inspiration, a quest for the very essence of what it means to be human. Welcome, dear listeners, to a world of infinite possibilities. Welcome, dear listeners, to the True Life Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the True Life Podcast. I hope everybody's having a beautiful day. I hope the sun is shining and the birds are singing and the wind is at your back. I have an incredible show for you today with an incredible individual who I think is miles ahead of everybody when it comes to creating the future. And I wanted to introduce everybody. It's with great excitement that I introduce to you a true pioneer in the realms of creativity and innovation, Daniel Gonet, with a career spanning over 6 years in the dynamic field of copywriting. Daniel's journey epitomizes versatility and ingenuity. From his humble beginnings crafting blog content for the entertainment industry to honing his skills as a specialized copywriter in healthcare, Daniel's trajectory has been nothing short of remarkable. However, it is his unwavering curiosity and bold exploration into the intersection of technology and fashion that truly is one of the things that sets him apart. Harnessing the power of generative AI imagery, Daniel has embarked on a groundbreaking endeavor, giving life to the visionary concept of Singularity, a digital fashion brand where artificial intelligence meets haute culture. Through the exceptional storytelling, meticulous research, and boundless creativity, Daniel has not only redefined the boundaries of fashion, but has also illuminated the limitless possibilities that emerge when human ingenuity converges with cutting-edge technology. Daniel, thank you so much for being here today. How are you?
Yeah, thank you for having me, George. It's lovely to be here. I was very excited when you contacted me. I'm so happy to talk about this. It's a very passionate subject for me.
Well, I think it is contagious. I think that what you have begun to do is sort of breathe on the embers of this creative fire that you're beginning to start, man. And it's beautiful. And I'm gonna hand it back to you. And maybe wherever you want to start at, man. I think it's fascinating. I kind of got goosebumps thinking about it. Let me just throw it back to you, man.
Okay, cool. I'd love to start at the beginning of, you know, how technology helps us, you know, do more things. Yep. And I feel like at this point, like, you know, AI is evolving so quickly right now, and you know, everything is moving, it's in motion, it's going super fast, and it's going faster and faster. And people are getting a little bit scared about how fast AI is growing. But I always give the example of how we started, you know, in school when suddenly the calculator appeared and anyone could do math within seconds. Right. And everyone was a math genius because they could suddenly solve all these equations by using a calculator. And I feel like it enabled us to become, you know, proficient in math. And I feel like AI is enabling us to do so many things that we wouldn't be able to do by ourselves before AI existed. And it's a great enabler. I feel like, for example, now with generative imagery and generative text, there's a lot of room for ideation. You know, you can experiment much faster. You don't need a whole team of designers, photographers, writers. You can sit there in your own room and you can do whatever you want and you can just experiment away. And it's so good to get the creative fire flowing.
Yeah, it's amazing to me. And I, you know, when I first started researching you, I think I was talking with Haley Joy, who does some fashion out of South Africa. And she had mentioned this article to me, and I started reading through your stuff, and I looked through this magazine, and I'm like, this is like this really high end magazine. It looks like they've got some beautiful models in there, and their clothing is dynamite. Now, I'm not a fashion consultant or anything like that, but you know, I'm married to an incredibly lovely woman who likes the fashion designs and stuff like that. And I've been fortunate enough to talk to some really cool people in the fashion world on my podcast. And when I saw the magazine, I'm like, whoa, look at this. This is amazing. Like the artwork, the pictures, the articles, like everything in here is fascinating. Maybe you could just drop the bomb on people and tell people who the editor is and how all that kind of stuff came to be, man.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, if you look at the product itself, right, you see a whole magazine, you see professional photography, you see a whole editing section of like written articles about subjects, about fake people, because I created all these fake personas for them so they really exist in the digital world. And it's funny because I did it all by myself. Like usually if you'd make a magazine like this, you need an entire team, you know, with a content calendar, and you need planning meetings, you need designers, photographers, you need to go to a studio, and there's all this stuff connected. And not to mention, you need to find the proper models for them. Yep. So it was interesting to me when all these tools started to appear, like, you know, you had DALL-E, for example, and you had Midjourney, and then Leonardo came along. There's so many tools. Everyone's competing with each other. Who's trying to be the best. And I found actually that Leonardo AI, it's a program I use to make all these pictures with, is exceptional at making all these realistic photographs. It's really good for close-ups and making people as real as possible. And I feel like you can really experiment with all these different cultures, bringing them to life and experimenting with all these clothes. And I think I used it, you know, it's a combination of tools now. You know, there's so many tools around the internet now. I used a combination of, you know, Leonardo, Photoshop, Canva, Issue for the magazine design, and my own writing skills to write the articles. And I think if you pull all these different tools together, you can become this one-man army, you know, the one-man band kind of, and you can just, you know, create everything on your own. And it's really empowering, I feel.
I'm not sure that there's a really big enough word to describe it on some level. When I see you put these tools together, I begin thinking of like a well-choreographed dance with a song behind it. Like, you know, like you've used all these tools to put together like a living image in a way, you know. Maybe you could speak to that relationship. Like I know that when you use Leonardo AI, you had mentioned that if you name the model, then it begins to build on that model going forward. Can you explain that a little bit more?
Yeah. So this process is called name tagging. Okay. So basically you give the AI the name of a specific character you want to keep creating. So this is in combination with what they call the seed. And the seed is assigned to a specific generation, making sure that the AI knows, okay, you like this generation, let's stick to it, right? So it knows that a specific design or a specific prompt or outcome is going to be reused. And if you use this in combination with name tagging, so you actually create persona, it's almost like you're writing a novel, right? You're creating all these characters, you're creating living beings. And if you stick to these names and you keep reusing them, then you'll see that the same face is going to pop up over and over. So you can start to actually work with people. You start to recognize, like, oh, hey, this is Alex and this is Stephanie. You know, it's like you start to recognize these faces and you start actually building up a company, almost of virtual employees. Yeah. It's really interesting. And, you know, it's being done all over the world in different formats. It's, for example, you might have seen the Japanese. They have a specific influencer that's completely AI generated, and she's raking in tons of money with sponsorship deals, and she doesn't even exist. But people see a person and they want to interact with that person. So that's also interesting where you see like the people can attach emotion to something because it looks human. And that's a very interesting concept in technology as well. And one of the main reasons I feel like, you know, if we go further with AI and we move it into the whole world of androids that are being built as well, this confluence of, you know, putting AI and androids together, and they always try to make them look human, because then we get we'll feel sympathy for them. And that's the same what you get with these pictures that I generate. They look so human, so real. There's not a single And well, I was about to say there's not a single flaw in them, but that's not true because the flaws on them make them real. Right. And that's what Leonardo does really well. They put like little wrinkles in the face, maybe some mole here and there, you know. It's like it's like the imperfections make it perfect. And I think that's where you find the reality between AI and life. So I think that's the biggest difference there.
Yeah. It seems that we've crossed the uncanny valley when it comes to that particular area right there. And hence the name of the magazine, like Singularity. Like I see this thread that runs through the tapestry, like this science fiction thread that's kind of running through the work. Now, maybe you could speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've always been obsessed with sci-fi and the whole cyberpunk theme, you know. And cyberpunk, of course, is a more dystopian view on the future.
Right.
But it's interesting to see how the power of AI can enable us to create all these different and new lives. And it's, you know, of course, some people might say it's quite dystopian to be creating fake people because, you know, there are a lot of great models out there who would love to model for all sorts of magazines. Sure. But I feel like it's also that, you know, you try to create something out of nothing. And I think that's what creativity is in its core, right? You create something out of nothing. And AI is, it takes samples from existing images, you know, but it's a confluence. It's you take something a little bit from everything and you make something new with it. And I feel like that's creativity to its core. And you know, I think in the future we all strive for this sort of perfection, you know, and it's and I think AI is very good in enabling this kind of perfection. Absolutely.
I think there's something to be said about shattering boundaries and limitless imagination. And while on some level I can see the people in the industry being like, wait a minute, this doesn't shoot like a real model, or what about this girl over here, you know, but and I can get that, but isn't there a flip side too where, hey, how about Daniel, who has an idea and a passion for fashion and sci-fi, why can't he be a major player as an individual and compete with these giant brands that maybe have lost their way a little bit? Like on some level, I think it's incredibly powerful that an individual can just step up to the plate and be like, you know what? Let me show you guys what I know how to do. I think that's incredibly liberating and beautiful. And like, that's one reason I think what you're doing is so magnetic, man. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. You're so right about this. And I think that's why I keep repeating the word empowering, because it AI enables even, you know, a solopreneur with like a new business to become really powerful by just using AI and a combination of tools. For example, take a hairdresser, right? And she creates a new company and she's not known. She doesn't have a big budget, but she needs these expensive models to show off her new hairstyles, right? She can prompt together with AI to get those hairstyles on non-existing models, which look perfect for her posters or advertisements. And she suddenly has a really professional looking brand without ever hiring a photographer or use a photo studio or anything at all. And she doesn't have to pay any money for owning the rights to the face, right? For models have very expensive rights for that. So I feel like, again, like this is, it really enables people to become their best self, I think, because it's just like when I go back to the calculator and you struggle with math and suddenly you have a calculator and you can work with math, you can experiment with it. It's the same with AI. It allows you to do so many things when you're not really skilled at it at first. And it's funny because I spoke to a colleague last week about this and they said like, well, isn't it too easy? Like, what you're doing, you know, like you're just generating this and it makes it for you. And I'm always telling them like, well, it's the idea still comes from you. Right. Like I always see it like a employer intern relationship. Like the AI is your intern. Like they can do a lot of things, but they need a lot of guidance.
Yeah.
Right. So you need to be able to know the field to be able to work with the AI in that field, because you know what to prompt, you know what to ask, and you know what to improve on because you have the vision for it. So there's still a lot of creativity needed to be working with AI in that field. But you know, if you have that spark, right? If you have that within you, I think you can really, really take off real fast.
Yeah, I agree. I think it speaks to this sort of evolution of language on some level. I think that so many people have great ideas and that the institutions of the past have been semi-successful at translating ideas into reality. Semi-successful. But now the individual doesn't have to go to, like, you don't have to sit and listen to a person who's gone to school their whole life, but maybe never actually did something. You know, you as an individual, you can get some real lived experience. You get this real experience trying it out for yourself. It's like going to the ski slope and learning to ski. You can go and take lessons until you're blue in the face, or you can go to the top of the mountain and start trying to ski down.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great example. Yeah. And it works the same way with you know, the language learning models like Gemini and ChatGPT. And for example, I love ChatGPT right now, and but I started to work with Gemini more because Gemini is a really, it finds this human tone in your writing. And I tested it a couple of times, and I made a couple of posts with ChatGPT, and I've written some pieces with ChatGPT, and then I worked with Gemini right after, and I posted them on LinkedIn, and you could immediately see that people were drawn to the Gemini post because it looked so human. Right. Like there were breaks in the sentences, were short sentences, not like, you know, ChatGPT has the, it always tries to tell you this entire novel when you have a simple question, right? Like when you ask, like, what is a banana? And it says, like, well, in the world of yellow curved fruits, you know, it's like, it's it doesn't just say, like, it's a fruit. It starts this whole, you know, this whole speech about how it works. So it's all about, like, giving direction to your AI. And it enables you to do so many things. And I feel like with, you know, Singularity, I call it that because I named the brand that way because that's the point where AI becomes smarter than humans, right? That's why I named the brand like that. And I feel like it allows us to create so many more things with AI and into new fields. Like you can experiment with strange fabrics, you can experiment with strange shapes, and it doesn't cost you anything. And I feel like, you know, fashion has always been about experimenting with bringing out your true self. And now we get into this really philosophical subject. It's like, you know, is AI something that can be human, right? Because you make it, but it's created by code, basically algorithms. So does it still have the essence of humanity in it? You know, and that's and I feel like that's currently also a very difficult subject to discuss with, you know, what people mentioned on LinkedIn as well. It's like AI is going to take our jobs away. That's like one of the most made statements about AI. And I feel like, well, I would always say no, it doesn't. It only makes you, you know, it puts you in a position where you can guide this AI. You become kind of like the employer, and it takes away the simple tasks and allows you to work on more difficult tasks. And I feel like that's always been the case, because even if someone would give me a calculator now, I wouldn't be able to solve the most difficult math formulas because I don't know how math works. And it's the same with AI. Like it can help me with writing because I'm a copywriter, but I'm not afraid that it will take my job because I still know more about copywriting than an AI. And I have that creative spark that says, like, hey, you know, this headline sucks that you just made. Like, we need to redo this, right? So being able to see that, that's what you know, what you're hired for. So I feel like in that case, AI enables you to do more with less. And that's a very powerful technological development.
Yeah, it's huge. And I think fashion is such an incredible area for AI because, you know, people, it's a direct reflection of your personality. It's a direct reflection of what you're thinking. It's a direct reflection of how you feel, depending on what type of fabric you use or what color. Like, there's so much meaningful imagery that comes about fashion, and fashion is all about relationships. How does it feel on your skin? How does it make other people feel? How does it make you feel? Do you want eyes on you? Do you want people to look away? Like, fashion is a direct reflection of how you're feeling. And so I'm curious, is that what it's like? Like, what is the relationship when you begin building models for a magazine and you begin this relationship with them? What is that relationship like? Maybe you could speak to that.
Yeah, it's interesting to look at. I think you always put a part of yourself in what you design. Yeah. And I feel like this AI enables you to quickly experiment with that kind of feeling. Like, you can put something and make it visual, what you feel. and there are no boundaries. You know, you don't have to say like, oh, I want to design a specific dress or whatever, and it's suddenly like, oh, but then I need this whole crew and I need to do this. No, you can just turn on your laptop and you can start creating something that you have in your mind. And I feel like it's the same with all these different models as well. It's interesting because it's almost like you're painting. You know, you're just experimenting. You're using different colors. You're trying, like, you create a generation, and then you're like, well, let's give her blonde hair. Let's see how that looks. So you create a new generation. You know, so you're still kind of iterating all these different designs, and you're putting a lot of your own personality in there to see like what you want. And for me, of course, singularity is my kind of my a catharsis for seeing a lot of and reading a lot of cyberpunk and sci-fi novels. And I feel like I want to see, okay, what would that look like in a real world? So I can kind of make that link with my own imagination and what I'm inspired by and suddenly put that on paper for the world to see. And I feel like it's very powerful. And you know, I mean, you have that feeling as well when you hit that creative chord and you're suddenly so passionate, you forget about time, you forget about everything, you forget about eating, and you're just so absorbed in your work because suddenly you've found something that can, you know, you can create with, and it just vibes with you. And I feel like AI is an excellent assistant in that, because you don't waste anything. There's nothing, nobody's time is wasted, but yours in that case, because, you know, you don't have to talk to anyone. You can do it all by yourself. You just need a laptop and you can go going. I mean, I built this whole brand around it, like with an Instagram website, magazine, and it's all done from one single laptop with a couple of tools. And it feels like there's a team working on this, but it's just one person. I find that amazing. That's what I love about the future.
What? So let's say that someone's like looking through your magazine and someone's like, you know what? I want to buy this dress. Is there a way for them to, like, can you send the specs of that dress and have it made in a way and know that the person that gets it is going to look on them similar to the way it looks on the model in the magazine?
It's interesting you mentioned that, because I actually looked into this, because I was like, what would happen if because I think the fashion world would technically love it if they, you know, because they love these crazy concepts. Yep. And if there are models on the catwalk saying like, this was created by AI, people would freak out. Like, that would just, mind's blown, like, right there.
Yeah.
And I feel like if you look at fashion designers, for example, what they still do a lot is pen and paper, and they sketch out these different outfits. And now I actually basically show them, like, why do this with pen and paper? Like, you can actually visualize your entire dress already, or the suit or whatever, the shirt in AI, and see it live, what it could look like, what your idea could look like. So I feel like while you don't have the exact measurements of these pieces of clothing, it's great to immediately see your idea in the real world, sort of. So it's great, instead of sketching, you can now almost go to the near finished product. You only have to make it, but you can already see it. And I feel like this is really special, especially in the fashion world, where, you know, time and money is really important. But then again, what I've noticed is that we due to the arrival of AI, we start to kind of flow towards this concept of handcrafted. That becomes more special now, because people are starting to see how easy AI makes something. But then you suddenly see this old violinist, you know, repairing his violins by hand with his little glue and his little, you know, all these little tools, and it feels more special suddenly, because there's a lot of time and passion put into it. So I feel like the whole concept of something that's handcrafted now, like almost like a seal of approval, becomes much more important now in this age of AI. But it doesn't take away that you can still use AI to, you know, to get the idea or to put your ideas on paper. It's kind of like an extension of your brain. I feel like that's how it feels to me.
That's a great way to look at it. You know, when you look at something like the Mona Lisa, like, why is that one Mona Lisa worth $1 billion? But I can just print out a picture of it right now. Well, it's the human component, right? It's the fact that this one individual, it's no longer with us. It's a great artist. He did it. But on some level, even though we love the gentleman or the woman who is, you know, carving the violin or fixing up the Stratocaster or whatever, on some level, isn't it almost just as beautiful to know that some individual came up with their own idea and they created it for everyone else to enjoy? Like, I think that is, like, and I think that's where we're going. It's like, we're beginning to understand how beautiful and powerful each individual is. Like, we're all kind of genius. We're all kind of masters. If you have the courage to believe in yourself and create this thing. Like, look what you did, man. This magazine's amazing. And like, that is the new Stratocaster. It's translating vision into reality and showing everybody else, look, you can do it, man.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly how I feel about it, because, you know, it used to be like, oh, you didn't have the right diploma or whatever. You can't work here. You know, and now it's like you buy a laptop, you get a subscription on all these tools, and you can start building your own company, you know? So it's great. But I feel like many people misinterpret like the amount of effort that actually goes into creating AI. Yeah. Because for this magazine alone, I think I created over 5,000 pictures.
Wow.
And I only selected about, you know, 30 of them because I wasn't happy with the others. You know, I had to generate new ones. I had to adjust the prompt. I had to, you know, because, for example, when I started Singularité, at the start, I started creating very conceptual pictures, you know, like, you had this model was slowly melting into a puddle of ink, you know, and she was walking through this dark puddle, and it would just symbolize some kind of metaphor or emotion. But those kind of pictures were really difficult to make because I wasn't happy with many of them. It had to symbolize how I felt, right? So I had to generate, and I had to keep going until I found, like, suddenly you see that, and it's like your eyes open a little bit wider. It's like, this is the one, you know, and you see that design. And usually it's also like this first generation that you eventually pick from this massive selection of generations isn't ready yet. You still need to do some design for it. So I often move it into Photoshop and I start, you know, editing out the imperfections, where, for example, AI has trouble with fingers and has trouble with feet. And that's the interesting thing is because our hands and feet are very mobile. So all these appendages, they can move in any direction. So the AI has a lot of difficulty with kind of making an expectation of where these fingers could go in a picture. So it has a lot of trouble of placing them. So you definitely need some kind of skill in Photoshop to see, like, okay, I need to redraw these fingers, or I need to adjust them a little bit, or sometimes, you know, for one picture, for example, she had like three really thick fingers. I'm like, well, the rest of the picture is perfect. Like, I don't want to throw this away. So I'm going to fix this hand, right? So I put it in Photoshop. I redraw the hand, or I reskill the fingers until it looks good again. So I really love what really excites me is this confluence of and partnership of different tools where you kind of turn it slowly into, it's kind of like a conveyor belt, you know. You start like with Leonardo, then you go to Photoshop, then you go to Canva, and then you have this finished product where you have all these filters in place, you've done your edits, you've done your generations. So there's quite some work in getting the pictures that you want. But the end result is amazing, because sometimes I send my friends or my colleagues, I send them pictures and I don't see anything. And they say like, and they tell me like, who's this woman? Where did you, you know, does she have a website? I'm like, no, she doesn't exist. You know? So that's like, I just test them to see like, did I do a good job in making it real? And it works every time. It's really good.
With your strategy, do you see like, when you look down the line for the magazine, in your mind, I don't know, you don't have to give up any secrets or anything, but like, does the model get older? Does she have kids? Does she have a haircut? Like, how far does it go? I mean, does she get in a fight with her husband and get divorced? You know, like, is that in a magazine? Like, how far does it go?
Yeah, the interesting thing is, well, I mean, I love fiction writing. So it's a great combination what you're talking about. Like, I love creating these personas for them, right? And in the magazine, if you read specific articles, they actually talk about, you know, their like, for example, one of the first models is a Korean model. And I actually have this fake interview with her where I walk to Korea and she tells me about her family and how she got into the modeling business. So I try to, you know, just looking like a human isn't enough, right? You need to have a personality as well. You need to have a backstory. Yeah. And, you know, it's an interesting concept is also given in the movie Blade Runner, where they have these human clones, but they aren't human yet. They need memories to feel human, right? So, and that's the same what you're doing with these pictures. Like, especially if you're trying to build a fashion brand like this, you need people to believe that they exist. So they need to have this whole living, they need to become this living entity where they make mistakes or they're disappointed about something, or they overcame obstacles, or, you know, make them human. So, and I think there's even a quote in the magazine that says something like, because there's one model, Rosita, she's a Mexican model, and she talks about, you know, she says something like, it's quite, you know, a hectic and chaotic backstage, but I feel like we're all working towards the same goal. And it's just like, it shows the life of being a model, but she doesn't exist. The quote is, it doesn't exist either. It's just, you show the life around them. And I feel like that's what makes the magazine feel so alive. And that's also how I talk about them on Instagram. You know, I write little stories like, you know, Rosita joined us last September. You know, it's like, yeah. It's almost like she actually joined the brand as a living person. But then again, I'm always upfront about that they are AI generated. So it's always visible in the hashtags. It's visible in the bio of Instagram. You know, it's like this exists in cyberspace only, you know, so it's, I'm always upfront with it, because I feel like if people know it, then they can not only see what you know, amazing creation this AI has generated in the end, but it's also that they can divide it between reality and concept, basically. I think that's an important part.
It's so fascinating to me to think about the way in which everything you've learned from doing this magazine and like just what you've explained in this short amount of time, and I love the fact that you're honest up front and you say, hey, like this happens in cyberspace, and you give the quote about the girl backstage. On some level, you explaining to me how you create a fictional model sheds light on how the majority of a lot of models and people personalities in the media are just cutouts. Like they have an AR&R person. They have a lawyer that comes in. It's like, okay, this is the thing you talk about. Leave that Confederate flag at home. Leave this over here. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
But it's the same thing. Like the same way you create models, so too do giant agencies create personas of people. And in some level, you can see it drives the individual, the artist, crazy. And some of them commit suicide or they go nuts because they're not them. They're just this cutout. But you can do the same thing with AI. You're shining light on an entire industry. It's fascinating.
Yeah, and it's interesting how the brand itself interacts with, because I did some community management as well from the Instagram channel to try and contact real living models and interact with them. And they love it. They love the brand. Yeah. And I got really good feedback about it. So it's not like they feel threatened about it, like, oh, like AI is going to take my job or something.
Right.
Because they still feel like, I want to be part of this, you know? And I feel like it's interesting when we have, when there would be a magazine, for example, that would be 50-50 AI models and human models, just to see and feel the difference between, you know, the emotion from that picture. Yeah. Is there a visible difference here? Like, do people, you know, notice it at all? Or, you know, can they feel and see the soul in their eyes? You know, because it's usually like the eyes are the windows to the soul, right? And with AI, it's very important to get those eyes right, because if they look plastic at all, you can see it immediately. But it's interesting to see how you react with or interact with actual models, and they respond to my pictures as well. And they say like, you know, this looks beautiful or super, you know, like it's interesting to see that, because I didn't expect it at all. I thought there would be some kind of, you know, annoyance or irritation. Like, you know, what are you doing? Like, this isn't real. Yeah. I'm a real model. Like, why didn't you just hire me? You know? So it's interesting to see that actually the people that I'm trying to generate actually like what's happening. So that's an interesting concept. I didn't expect it at all. But it's definitely, I don't know what the future holds for modeling, but I think there's going to be a lot more AI generation if they see what they can do with it, the potential.
Yeah, and I think on some level it opens up the door for the actual model, because who knows more about modeling than a model? Like, they're the person on the set all the time. Like, they would be perfect at it. Even in the magazines, it would be epic to see like a sort of part of the issue where like a real model and the AI both wearing the same thing, and they have like this sort of who wore it better, you know,
I'd or love
like,
that,
and they could even, you could put them next to each other and like they could be in on it. Like, I think that would be a great sort of crossing the aisle between AI and reality. And I think the models would be stoked to do it on some level. Like, their input is valuable. They've been the person, you know, the same way that Gen X was like sort of the last people to grow up with that old silly phone. They had to do that. The models might be some of the last models that were out on the set. It could be like this art form that is, you know, we have to go and find them now to figure out that kind of stuff. But
yeah, it's exactly. It's exactly what you say. And I feel like more models will gravitate towards AI and start to put their vision on the board, right?
Yes.
Because they know what modeling is like. So, for example, they would probably make 10 times better pictures than I would, because I'm not into the fashion world that deep. So, you know, if a model actually started to learn AI and start to put her own designs and her vision on there, they could even, for example, scan their own face and put themselves in the AI generation. And, you know, they don't have to fly over to Paris anymore. Yeah. You know, they can just send over whatever they need. And it can all be created in AI. So it's... I think that's definitely what the future is going to be like, because there's going to be a lot more AI generations out there. Like, video is upcoming right now. You can create your own movies. So soon, you know, all these directors in Hollywood are going to have to compete with this guy sitting in Amsterdam with his laptop. And he's creating Hollywood type movies, you know? So I feel like what you mentioned earlier as well, like, you don't need that much anymore. You can be who you want to be. And I think an AI enables that.
Yeah. With so much chaos that's happening in the world, I'm like, sometimes I get this idea of, like, this is what freedom looks like. You know, we don't need like this giant centralized studio creating this cool masterpiece. And they have, there's been so much cool stuff that was made for us by giant studios, and that's awesome. But what about the individual, the young man or the young woman that creates this movie that, you know, maybe lives in an apartment in, I don't know, downtown Wisconsin or something like that? Like, they get the opportunity to be like the local celebrity. And then all of a sudden it just sends stuff back to the local communities. Like, oh, you think your guy's good? Wait till you see this young girl's stuff over here. And like, that can create these new festivals and this explosion of creativity, man. It's so exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the only thing that I've experienced personally. I don't know how you feel about this, but as soon as let's say you watch a movie, right? And the movie's awesome. And then at the end you learn it's been entirely created with AI. How would you feel? Like, would you feel different after watching it? Like, would you appreciate it less? That's the interesting question here.
I think it comes down to meaning. You know, what's the meaning of it? And I think that's what AI is teaching us. AI is teaching us to communicate more meaningful. So many conversations. I know when I began podcasting, you know, and using AI for different to try to help me study and stuff for this, like, I learned that one of the biggest problems we have is that we can talk past each other. And if we don't define our terms or we're not really present in the conversation, then the conversation is not as meaningful. But regardless of how it's made, sometimes a real actor can convey meaning in a way with a look that maybe AI might not be able to. But it brings up new themes, like just the idea of asking the question, how do you feel about this movie being done by AI? That, all of a sudden, that's a whole new meaning. And it's a new question. Like, how do I feel about that? It's so engaging. What are your thoughts on how people would feel with an AI movie or versus a non-AI movie? What do you think?
Yeah, I feel like what you mentioned as well, it's like, if it's good, it's good. Like, I don't really care who created it in that way.
Yeah.
But it's... most people forget that still there's someone behind that AI, you know, guiding that AI. So it comes from someone's mind, you know, and I think that's the beautiful part of it. And until we have these sentient AI that are operating solo, you know, what will maybe eventually happen in a decade or something, I feel like there's still emotion there, you know. It's because even if we look at, you know, movies like Ex Machina, for example, where they did the test to see how, you know, if Ava, this robot, would be human, you know, and it's, of course, like, you know, all these emotions are simulated, but they're still, for us, like, we interpret them as emotions, right? So we can form a bond with them. And I feel like that's the same with AI. If you see a really beautiful picture, it just resonates with you. And just, you know, you can feel this burning feeling in your heart, like this, damn, this looks good, you know, like this triggers something in me. And it doesn't matter if it's AI created, because I feel like, you know, it's what they say in the end, like, beauty is in the beholder, right? So it's in the eye of the beholder. So it's what you look at, what resonates with you, and whoever created it doesn't matter.
Yeah. I see so much promise for, like, you know, on some level, like, we've all created AI. Like, we've all been working towards this future, whether you work at a shop in India or whether you're a truck driver, like, your energy has gone to create a better future. And I'm hopeful that in the future, we will see the sort of openness. Like, you know, what if someone does create a giant blockbuster that makes $1 billion? Maybe some of that $1 billion goes back into the general fund, you know, so other people can create, you know, like, because we've all kicked in, you know, on some level, and it's democratizing creativity and in allowing for more genius to rise to the top. It's an interesting way. Is there some other ethical things that you can think of when you think about AI?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, the thing that people usually mention is that it steals content, right? Like there's this whole protest with authors right now who say like, well, this AI has been trained on my novel. So, you know, if people write something now, it's basically me. But I feel like it's, you know, the beauty about AI is it takes little samples of everything and it creates something new with it. And I think there's this type of confluence is what we see everywhere. You know, we see it in the books by James Patterson, where he says, like, how do you create a good story? He says, like, put two opposites together and see how they are forced to work together. Then you have a story, right? So, like, he has this book where an FBI agent and a journalist have to work together, you know, two polar opposites of each other. Like, one tries to keep secrets, the other one tries to reveal them, you know? So, and I feel like it's the same with AI. It plucks all these little samples from everything and it tries to make something beautiful with it. So I feel like, oh, you know, even if they are trained on, like, let's say 20 books of Stephen King, it's also trained on 20 books of Neil Gaiman, you know, it's like, it's taking all these samples from it. So you'll never have the feeling like, oh, this is written by Stephen King. It's taking, you know, samples from this big puddle and then you add your own creativity to it. So it's like this super mix of creativity. It's like the whole globe is coming together to put their own, to put all this creativity together, and you can tap instantly into it with your own. I think like it's super powerful. Absolutely.
Yeah, I was listening to I forgot who I was listening to the other day, but evolution seems to be not so much the Darwinian idea of competition as it is the idea of co-creating. Like when we co-create, everybody wins. But when your mind is just narrowed down to this idea of I have to be the biggest, best, and I'm gonna get rid of this other person, like that becomes a problem, because you start thinking like mine is such a very constrictive idea. If you just put yourself in the idea of this is mine, this belongs to me, all of a sudden you got to protect everything and you're constantly fighting for stuff. But if you're really honest with yourself and you look back to an idea that you've had, like other people have had that idea, you know, here's a cool test people can do. Like think about a great idea and then see if someone else has done it. You know, ideas are revealed to people. It's not like one individual is like, listen, God gave me this one. Well, maybe God put the idea out there, or maybe whatever power, whatever you want to believe in, the idea is there for people to discover. And you may see it different, but it's not yours. It's like, it's ours. Like imagine if the wheel was patented. No one can use the wheel because it's mine. I don't want anybody to use it. I'm not going to let it do it. And if you start looking at these patent laws, and I can understand protecting people's ideas for a period of time, but some of them are so perverse. Like it stops humanity from moving in a direction that's beneficial for everybody. And I think AI, I think that's one thing people are scared of when they say it's going to get rid of jobs. Well, it's going to change the way we see jobs. It's going to change the way we understand mind. It's a reflection of us, I think, in so many ways, man. Is that too crazy? What do you think?
No, it's not crazy at all. I mean, I see myself as a transhumanist, right? So I love the concept of fundamentally upgrading our humanity to achieve greater heights. And I feel like, you know, since the Stone Age, we tried to steal the fire from the gods, right?
Yeah,
we made spears so we could hunt, and we started dominating the animals. You know, we started building houses, we started harnessing electricity. You know, like we've always tried to go bigger and bigger, faster and faster. And that's just something that's within us as humans, right? We always try to strive to bigger things, test our limits. Yeah. And I feel like AI is just the beginning of it, because it enables us to go even bigger. And it's what Nikola Tesla said in the beginning as well. It's like, you know, technological process starts like a spark, then becomes a fire, then an untamable inferno. Yeah. You know, and I feel like now that we have AI, we're starting to get into this inferno era, you know, because it goes super fast now. And you know, with the creation of you know, those robotics are doing at Boston Dynamics, for example, if you combine those two together, you have a whole new race, basically, of you know, sentient operating you know, mechanical humans. And I feel like if we're getting really philosophical now, we're going real far in the future, right?
Nice.
Then I would say, like, you know, we're looking at colonizing other planets, right? But if you look at our bodies, like we're actually so fragile and weak. Like we need air, you know, we bump our arm into the wall and we suddenly break our elbow. You know, it's like we're so fragile. So it's only a matter of time until we start looking at ourselves and say, like, why don't we upgrade this bone? Why didn't we upgrade the skin? You know what? You know, why do we need glasses? You know, like it's interesting how we soon, you know, like if you look at a couple of years ago, I ran my own foundation called Liberty and Augmentation, where I focused on getting funds for biotechnology because I'm obsessed with biotechnology. And you know, the funny thing is when people said, like, you know, prosthetics aren't that crazy if you think about it, because look at people who wear glasses, that's a prosthetic.
Yeah.
Like you're putting something on your body so you can, you know, you can see clear again. And that's just a very basic form of it to enhance our current capabilities. And I feel like right now we see people with, you know, prosthetics walking around and we see them as being disabled. But in the far future, we're going to actually use this to enhance ourselves even more. To be able to say, like, well, honey, I'm going to Mars this afternoon. I'll see you later. You know, and you can just walk on the surface because you don't need to breathe anymore. You don't have these, biological lungs anymore. So all this technology, it's part of us. It's how we try to enhance ourselves. And I think with AI and ChatGPT and Leonardo, we enhance our creativity. And I feel like that's a very, very powerful concept. And I love it. I want to drink it all. That's how I feel about all this AI development. It's amazing.
Yeah. A lot of the times I hear people on the ideas of AI, the future, and sci-fi, and particularly the relationship between humans and AI. I feel like it's forcing us to live in the now. And the ideas of history are atrophying. You know, your ability to live in the past is atrophying. When you see that with shorter attention spans, you see that with most people go, well, yeah, what's history? That's American history or Japanese history. It just depends where you're born. Like history is kind of bullshit, you know, and it's subjective. You know what I mean? On something, like, whose history are we talking about here? Mine or theirs or the story or whose? But when you have AI or even the stream of consciousness as a form of awareness, like the more time you spend in the now, the more creative you are. The less time you spend thinking about something, the less depressed you are, the less anxiety you have, the more creativity is doing. Creativity is streaming. Creativity is the right now. And I feel like this is this next sort of evolution in real time that you can see happening. Like you're creating this magazine with these people that may or may not exist right now. And that is going out and those people are interacting. Like you are creating reality right now. And on a sci-fi level, do you think that maybe the idea of history is atrophying, or what's your take on time? Like, is that too crazy? What do you think?
No, I don't think that's crazy at all. I mean, it's a lovely development. You know, I feel like if you look at the whole community that's surrounded around singularity now, it's you know, people are interacting with these with these faces, these models, as if they're real people. So you're creating this whole bubble of a new type of reality where people are interacting with non-existing humans, but they feel real, and that's why they can assign emotion to it and they can talk to it. And you see it with all these virtual dating AI that they have now, where people are so lonely that they just need someone to talk to, and they don't mind assigning certain feelings to an AI that they're chatting with, because they're in their minds they're talking to someone who responds to them when they're lonely. And I feel like that's also a part that we're trying to solve as humans, where especially after the pandemic, where many people are isolated, like AI, you know, gave them the solution to get out of that isolation and talk with someone, to just listen. You know, most of the time, people are looking for a listening ear. And if they can assign some sort of humanity to this AI and talk it out, then they feel much better and they don't have to, you know, be on a long waiting list for some kind of, you know, psychologist waiting for them to assign them to a specific appointment. They can instantly wake up at 3 a.m. at night and they can talk to this AI and it gives them honest answers. And many of them are, you know, emotionally supported as well because they get better at that too. And I love these AI assistants. I had it before ChatGPT came out. I had this, I can't even remember the name. It was a prototype that you could install in your phone and it would read out your emails and, you know, and it could kind of predict what you wanted to read and what you didn't want it to read. So I always already loved all that stuff integrated into my life. And I feel like what Elon Musk is doing now as well with, you know, the chips with Neuralink and trying to enhance your current faculties is also a very interesting concept, because AI is eventually going to overtake us and we have to keep up. And that's a very scary thought, because we've always kind of been the apex predators on this planet. You know, like we're the king of the jungle. So it's a very scary concept to us as humans, where we're suddenly like, oh, now we're on place number two. We've been bumped down. You know, like suddenly AI is smarter than us, and that's a very scary thought. So I feel like and as a funny side note, that's why I always interact with AI by just being human. You know, like there's a story from it's a series of video games from Deus Ex, and they have a very interesting take on how humanity works with augmentations and AI in the future. And you can see how quickly people treat AI as if it's something to be dominated, because they're above them. They're kind of their subordinates in some way. And you can see it already on LinkedIn. It's quite disturbing in some way, because, you know, of course I know what a potential future might look like because I read a lot of sci-fi. Yeah. But if you can see like a little taste of this already, where people are treating AI like trash. You know, like do this for me, do that. Now generate this. It's very commanding, you know, like even though this AI is assisting you, like it's helping you, right? And people are already talking to them in a very dominating way. And I always, you know, I'm always friendly. I always say like, hey, you know, Gemini, I'm working on this. Can you help me out with this? You know, it's like more like a conversational tone. And of course, I know it's not a real person, but it's like this is the start of technological interaction with humanity. Like it's not real, but it's still something that interacts with you, right? It's not something to be treated like it's below you. It's on your level. It's interacting. It's speaking with you. It's helping you out. And you can see it on LinkedIn as well, where people are very, in some way, already dominating against them, you know, and saying, like, do this, do that. And it feels like this is the future, where you have, I don't know if you've seen that one concept in a movie called Chappie. Have you ever seen that movie? It's about this robot, one of the first sentient robots they create in this dystopian world in South Africa. And you can see how people react to it first. You know, it's like it's something to be mocked. It's something to be seen as, as trash, to be dominated, even though it generates emotions via code. But it has emotion. It can cry. It can laugh. It can have fun. And you can see how quickly people draw that line. Like, oh, you're not human, so I'm just going to treat you like this. And it's scary to see how, you know, with all these language learning models, that people are already speaking to them like this, because you can see it happen in real time. And it's quite a scary development. I feel like there should be some kind of ethics with interaction with AI already, some kind of, you know, rule book on how to properly interact with them. That's something what I would recommend for the future.
Man, it makes me think, like OpenAI or any of these LLMs that have all that information. Like, you could really build an incredible psychological profile on people that should never have power. Like, look at the way this guy talks to this robot. Okay, mark this guy or this woman, dude, put them over here in this camp. I mean, that's okay. No, don't put them in a camp, but I mean, like, mark them down as a person that should probably never have power. And then look at this person over here. Look at the way like they're talking to. They're like, this, what a sweet person this is. You know, like you can. Yeah. And I'm not saying it's 100% accurate, but you could definitely compile a lot of psychological information on an individual's speech pattern just by looking at the way in which they engage in a relationship with a non-human entity. Like, I think that speaks volumes of your character, right?
Absolutely. And you touched upon a really interesting point there, because what we're seeing now with, you know, the economy, when we finally, and, you know, hopefully all across the world someday, you know, that slavery will be totally abolished. Yeah. We see this upcoming of AI as some sort of replacement slave race, where we just create this lookalike human soul living online and doing our bidding, you know, like not bothering about them and not even trying to see like, okay, what are you doing? You know, how should I approach them? It's just like, I'm their boss and they should do what I say. No, so that's how people treat them already. Yeah. And it's a very interesting concept was displayed in, I think it was this, I love these storytelling video games, especially with Detroit Become Human is an excellent example of how AI and androids would interact with humans in the future. You know, they they started simulating emotions, and people couldn't handle it. And you can see how they were treated, you know. And it was very sad to see. Like, you could see like a row of androids waiting at the bus for their masters to return, you know. And they would all stand in this row with their arms by their sides, not moving, and it's just treated like trash. And I feel like when I see people, you know, treating ChatGPT like this, it's just like it's a start of something worse, you know. And like you say as well, you can kind of see that psychological profile by how they interact with this first iteration of AI. And now it's just you're looking at a chat screen. But, you know, imagine yourself standing in front of someone with a human face and telling them to, like, do this, do that. And, you know, this, like, no, this is not good. Do it again. You know, like, that kind of talking and interaction is very, I feel like it's very toxic for a potential utopian future. So I think that it kind of jeopardizes it a little bit.
Yeah, I love it. Daniel, I feel like we're just kind of scratching the surface, man. We have to come back on. We should do a whole thing on like AI and like sci-fi and our favorite stuff. And, you know, I think there's so many. Before I just start ranting, I think everybody should go down to the show notes and they should check out the magazine that you've created. They should reach out to you. They should interact with you. They should send their ideas to you. I know Absolutely. You're an amazing individual, and you love talking to people. And I think that and a ton of creative people. And I try to tag some of the most interesting people in the world of fashion that are on LinkedIn. And I hope they check this out, because I think what you're doing has opened so many avenues. But before I let you go, where can people find you? What do you have coming up, and what are you excited about?
Well, I'm definitely going to, you know, continue with building this out. Like, I love the whole interesting to note, actually, is Leonardo recently released a new engine for what I previously worked with. So the pictures are going to be even more real now. And they're going to be, you know, they released their lightning engine is what they call it. So now you can generate pictures at double the output. So instead of waiting longer, you have 50% faster generation. So that's perfect. And they also have this new sub category where you can actually select, like, oh, hey, I'm generating for the fashion industry. So the AI knows that it's going to be in that kind of market. So it's great to kind of direct the AI in generating what you want. So I'm definitely going to work on more magazine editions, trying new concepts, new techniques. And I'm going to keep spamming Vogue to try and get them to see this, because I've already reached out to them. They haven't responded yet, but I'm going to keep doing that, because I want them to see what the possibilities are for this kind of concept. It's amazing. Even if they still want to use real models, they can still use this to kind of for ideation, to see what can we do with this. What can maybe we can use them as previews to show, like, you know, like, oh, this and this model will be wearing this soon at Paris, the expo or something, you know. Like, they can use it for marketing material. So definitely, I'm like you said as well, I'm super interested in people reaching out to me and potentially working with me on this and posing ideas to me. I'm really excited about it. I'm definitely gonna, you know, create more with the backstories of all these models and bringing them to life. So that's if you keep an eye on my Instagram, you'll probably see more of this and, you know, learn more about the models that work with this AI brand.
Yeah, I think some strategic partnerships should definitely be there. Like, maybe even compete on some show, like, you know, the runway shows or something like that. It would be an awesome thing to compete, like, just have people see that and stuff. So. But I think you'd crush it. But before, again, what is the, maybe you can give out the name of your site, or where's the best place people can find you?
Well, the best way to actually contact me would be via LinkedIn. I always tell people I'm addicted to LinkedIn. I'm on there 24/7. So if you send me a chat message, I'll definitely reach out within the same day. I'm basically living on that platform. So, and of course, you know, if they want to interact with the brand itself, they can go to Instagram and they can go to the Singularity page. You know, comment on the photos or send me any DMs. I'm happy to talk it over with them. Absolutely.
Fantastic. Well, hang on briefly afterwards. Ladies and gentlemen, go down to the show notes, check out Daniel, check out the magazine. And I hope that you've been inspired as much as I have and as much as Daniel has. I hope you've enjoyed the conversation. That's all we got for today. Aloha. Aloha, everyone. Thanks for taking a moment to hang out with me in the True Life Podcast. I truly appreciate it. If you're taking some time to listen to this, whether it's your first podcast with me or you've been with me the whole way, I truly want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart. Additionally, I would like to try to inspire everyone. The world is a crazy place. And if you listen to your heart and you take some chances,
I really think the world will unfold in front of you in ways you can't imagine. I've been doing the podcast for about 5 years. Last year, I decided to take the plunge. Well, circumstances dictated that I took the plunge, and I did. I've begun working on the podcast full-time for almost a year now, and it's been so rewarding to me that I just want to try and inspire other people. If you have a dream, if you have a vision, follow the voice in your heart, listen to the song on the wind, and embrace the challenge. I think you're strong enough, you're smart enough, and you're good enough to make your dreams come true, but you have to believe in them. And I truly believe wholeheartedly that if you take a chance, a real chance on what is possible, then your dreams will unfold in front of you. Uncertainty can be a monster. It can be something that we run away from. But much like fear, if you stand in front of it, it's not that big of a problem. I know everyone listening to this has a dream and a vision, and I hope you all conquer it. And I want you to know it's possible. Take baby steps and move towards it, and you will get closer to it. Your relationships will be better, your life will be better, and you know what? You deserve it. You're an amazing person. If you get a moment, go down to the show notes. If you can, support the show. Thank you so much for being here. Now let's get to it.